Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is writer-director Brandon Christensen, whose new suspense thriller, horror, Z, is going to be available on September 1st on Video On Demand, digital, HD, DVD, and Blu-ray, and it has extras that I can't wait to get to. And if you can't wait to see it, go check out Shudder. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, how are you?
pretty good. Now, you directed Z and also co-wrote it.
Correct, yep.
What was the inspiration, the spark that got this story started? Because this is... It seems mundane when you look at the plot, little boy acting out, parents have to deal with it, but the way it is shot builds up so much tension throughout the entire film. It's like, what are they doing? This is awesome.
Pretty much, I mean, after my first film, Stillborn, came out, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next, and I was looking at my own kids, because I had two at the time. And my oldest one had just started going to kindergarten, and it was the first time that my wife and I were kind of, you know, letting him go out into the world for the day and then come back and share all the new information he had picked up from, you know, from his classmates and from his teacher. And it started a conversation of like, well, what if, you know, what if what he brought home was not good for him? What if he brought, you know, say, a demonic entity home for us? What do we do then? And then it just sort of led to a conversation of a creepy kid type of film where, you know, a family's dealing with something that the kid has. And then my wife threw out the idea of an imaginary friend. And that started the snowball conversation of just like, oh, that's really interesting. What does that mean? What are the, you know, what are the characteristics of imaginary friends that we can kind of, you know, we can play with? And it just led to my wife and I writing the first draft of the film, which was, it had kind of the keystones, like the, you know, the mother, the twist of the stuff at the, in Z and everything, but it was missing kind of what makes Z really unique now, which is sort of why Z is attached to this one family. Why is Z, you know, terrorizing this one family? And that was, that came in, you know, the second and third draft that I wrote with Colin Minahan.
Was there any thought to how to balance the perception, the audience's perception on whether or not this is a psychological issue or a true demonic issue or some other sort of supernatural happenstance?
Yeah, I think, I mean, in a film like this where you have characters questioning, you know, reality, and I mean, the whole idea of the film is the imaginary versus, you know, the you know, the reality that we live in. So I think just by its very nature, you're going to be playing with those expectations a little bit, because you've got one character in Josh who is young and vibrant and has, you know, a wealth of imagination to play with. And then you have a character in Beth who is the complete opposite, who is, you know, she's stuck to her schedule now. She doesn't have, you know, she's a mom now. She's got tons of responsibilities and things like that. There's just no time for being really imaginative and playful and stuff like that. And she's sort of forgotten that part of herself. And so we're able to kind of explore why she forgot that part of herself and what happened that made her forget that part of herself. And ultimately, that's what the movie ends up being about, is what happened in her life that made her, you know, forget what it was like to be a kid again. And that's what kind of Z represents, is sort of that lost innocence and that lost childhood that you once had, and how you lose it. And, you know, how can you retain that? Like the father character in the film, he's much more playful with his kid. He's definitely still got some of that. So I don't think what Z is would affect him as much, but it's definitely got a lot of different ways you can look at it. And it's intentional. You want to be able to put the audience in the character's shoes and try and experience it and, you know, empathize with them and see sort of where they fall. Cause I've talked to people that are on all different spectrums. They, like, some say it's, you know, it's a supernatural horror film. Some say it's you know, a mental illness film. Some say it's kind of like a nature versus nurture, how we raise our kids, you know, ultimately dictates where they end up, those kind of things. So it's fun to have sort of a wide gamut of reactions.
And I'm in there somewhere in the middle. Is Z a manifestation of some unknown trauma that preceded the events that Beth sort of, I guess, blocked out, which we won't spoil here, and that there's a lot to question in there that makes you wonder what's going on. And like I said, the way you shot a lot of these scenes, the way you drew out the tension until literally things couldn't get any more taut was delightful in a suspense thriller. You expect that, and well delivered, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's fun to. I mean, one of the fun things about the film is that even though Z is rarely in the film, he still has to be in the film. You know, you've got to feel his presence. And I think some of the tension comes from the fact that even in simple scenes where they're sitting at a dinner table, simple scenes where they're having breakfast, you leave space in the frame for the camera for Z. If we had the actor sitting there, he would have fit into the frame perfectly because we framed a lot of these shots up as if Z was there. So it's kind of interesting to, you know, when you're filming at something like this, you're leaving space for, you know, for the audience to fill in the imagination, like, oh, Z's there, because, you know, I understand camera work enough that I know that there's a space there because we want to imply the fact that Z is with them listening in on this conversation. And so we were able to do that a lot, and it kind of gives the film a feeling of like, there's always sort of this third party in the mix that you're not able to see, or Beth's not able to see, but it's still always there. And so you're giving it these unique identifiers that allow you to kind of understand as a, you know, as a viewer that there is something there.
Yeah, it's sort of a different way to play around with practical effects, because the few moments you see Z are fairly digital, but where, like you said, the space you left for him where he's there but no one but Josh sees him, that technically is a practical effect.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had an actor playing Z, so in all the scenes that he is seen, there is someone there. There was just some slight digital changes to his face, just to try and make it a little odd, more odd, because we had a guy in a full prosthetic, he had a big smile and all this stuff, and it was creepy, but we just wanted to enhance it a little bit more, just to make it a little bit more off-putting.
Now, I don't want to spoil anything for people who haven't seen it yet, but the scene with the staircase and the unexpected surprise there, that happened so quickly and was so startlingly unexpected. Oh my goodness. That was how was that blocked out? Because I slowed it down to try and see what that was, and I couldn't figure it out.
I mean, that was always there from the beginning because, you know, as a parent, that's one of the fears that you have as a parent, anytime your kids go upstairs, is just like, what if, you know, what if something happens here? What if something were to go wrong up there? If I turn my, like, can I allow them to play up there without me watching them? I don't know. And so that was one of the fun things, was just like taking that base instinct fear that you have as a parent and, really kind of creating the nightmare scenario out of it. And, when we shot it, I mean, when we wrote it, it was a little bit different. It had there wasn't like a two-story fall. Okay, we're going into spoiler territory, but it's fine. It was supposed to just sort of a body lands behind in the background, and that was it. Like, it was, you know, landed with a gross thud behind them, and they, you know, it kind of plays out that way. But when we were scouting for the location, the place that we found, and they were really the only people that would allow us to shoot, that was close to the main house that we were shooting. We went there and we looked at the stairs, and it was basically just one long banister that went all the way down to the basement. And we were just like, okay, can we make this work? And so we as we were filming it, we had a dummy, a child dummy that we could use, and we were dropping it, and it was just kind of like, it just shot through the staircase, and we did it again and we did it again. It just didn't have really any impact. So we decided to try throwing it at the banister on the main floor, so it would have that impact that you need, because it's the sound and it's the vision of just that crunch that that really kind of sells the whole idea. And so we just, you know, got to have fun throwing it down there. And eventually one of them made sense enough for, you know, it had the right kind of contortions that it felt right.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the DVD and Blu-ray, there's an audio commentary track by you. And I, you know, full disclosure, I think I have an addiction when it comes to commentary tracks because I adore them so much. What in that commentary did you go into about getting the film made, getting certain shots composed?
You know, it's funny. That was the first time I've ever done a commentary track, and it's very and since it was solo, it was very hard. I had a bunch of notes written down that I could kind of touch on, but sometimes you would hit the note, and then the second note would be coming up pretty much immediately, and you would kind of like jump through some stuff, and then all of a sudden you finish a note, and your next note's not for 6 or 7 minutes, and you're just like, oh no, I need to fill in the next 6 or 7 minutes with whatever. I'm probably never going to listen to that commentary track because it was like a blur to me. I just sort of started talking for an hour and 23 minutes and, which is a long time, you know, with no breaks, it's just, kind of chatting like about whatever came to mind in the moment a lot of the time. And so I honestly don't even remember what I said. I recorded it like a month ago or maybe 2 months ago. And, yeah, it's just kind of like you're just reacting to what's happening on camera or, you know, on the film itself. So I don't know. Hopefully someone gets something out of it because I honestly don't remember what happened.
Some of the most unexpectedly interesting commentary tracks I've listened to have, let's say, tangents attached to them. Like mm-hmm. they'll be talking about a scene and then they'll say something about something that's related to that scene and just leave the film for about 5 minutes talking
right.
about that side topic. And that actually helps to illuminate some of that, you know, that director or that actor's process, because what they thought of while watching that scene could well have been what they were thinking of when putting that scene together, when setting that scene up. And that adds a little true depth to what's going mm-hmm. on. And I love those kind of little insights.
There was definitely one that I do remember recording when it's right at the beginning, because there's the opening of the film when Josh is playing with his toys.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't shoot that during principal photography because we just didn't have time. So I had Jet fly to my house months later before we locked picture. And me and my friend Clayton just kind of went into my loft and set up a bunch of toys and filmed that whole sequence. But the problem was that Jet hadn't cut his hair until he came over, which was months later. So he had like total hockey boy hair. And my normal stylist, the person that does my hair, wasn't available. So I took him to a somewhat reputable national chain that does haircuts. And I had a photo of the scene immediately after. I was like, this is what he needs to look like. We need you to cut it like this. And she starts cutting away, and I turn away for just 2 seconds, and I look back, and they had cut his hair to look like Lloyd from Dumb and Dumber, like
oh, no
bangs, nothing. And it was just this devastating thing because, like, I had to pay out of pocket to fly them there because we didn't have any budget left. So they, you know, I was just like, we can't shoot him like this. It's not – he looks like, you know, the poor kid. He looks like Lloyd Christmas. And so I was – you know, I was pretty devastated there, but luckily my wife, her mother's a hairstylist, and she has a couple wigs, and we had one that was kind of like a bob, and we bobby pinned it up to kind of somewhat match what it looked like on the thing. But if you watch that opening, you can see the wig kind of slips a little bit, like you can see around the frame, which is pretty funny, but you wouldn't notice it unless you were looking for it.
Oh man, yeah, your opening scene has a hairtastrophe in it. That's awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
So, other than absorbing the way the audiences have embraced Z, what are you working on or planning to work on next?
I've got a different film that I'm doing in October that I'm shooting. It's kind of a total departure for me because, I mean, it's still horror, but it's going to be, you know, there's no kids, there's no parents. It's a much different kind of story. There's no monsters. There's no supernatural stuff. It's all, you know, just very, it's a very small story, but I think it's very resonant. It has a lot of resonance in, you know, today's the climate. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Super small cast, super small crew. It was kind of written during COVID. And so it's got, you know, it's built to be shot during COVID. I'm really excited to go into it just to sort of explore these characters.
Cool. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that. And is there any place people can follow you online to keep tabs on your next horror endeavors?
My Instagram is probably the most useful one. My Instagram handle is the Brandon Christensen, all one word.
Cool. Well, we will include a link to that as well as to places where people can find Z. Brandon, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you doing this.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
Z falls into that category of mind games type of horror films or suspense films. There's a psychological mystery along with the murder mystery, the monster mystery, whatever other mystery there happens to be. There's a psychological game going on that plays with perception and reality. And I don't know, I kind of find those films that fit into that subgenre kind of intriguing. Another one came out earlier this year was After Midnight. And interviewing those guys who did that one was a lot of fun because that movie kept you guessing. And there's something similar going on here with Z. The mystery isn't as deep as the one in After Midnight, but the connections are just as intriguing. And I apologize if we got a little too deep in that conversation and spoiled a very pivotal scene. But trust me, you won't see it coming. When it happens, you're going to jump. It's a true jump scare. And the aftermath of it is devastating. It's shocking. It's you start to feel for the family. You start to wonder, what is Josh doing? Why is Josh doing it? And his poor mother, oh my goodness. She's at wit's end, and almost everything goes sideways after that. So yeah, I recommend if you're into a quiet horror that sneaks up on you, that hides most of its hand for most of the movie, I think you'll enjoy Z. It should be available now. It's available video on demand, digital HD, DVD, and Blu-ray as of September 1st. So you should be able to find it at pretty much most of your favorite retailers. So go check it out if you have a chance. But what do you enjoy about the quieter side of horror films, the ones that aren't combined with action or slashers or serial killers, call in. Let us know. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Player FM, iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Let other folks know that you are enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/sliceofscifi. And of course, there is the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, leave a comment on this interview or any others that we've done, or weigh in with your own rating for some of the graphic novels, movies, TV shows, DVDs that we have reviewed. Get that geek conversation going. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting the show and all the other podcasts and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your donations through PayPal, your pledges through Patreon really do help keep the lights on around here. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if a monthly pledge isn't something you can commit to at the moment, the PayPal link is paypal.me/scifisummer. Use it as often as you wish. Like I said, every nickel helps. And for those who are Patreon supporters, you are eligible for a perk. Every month I pick a name out of the hat, and that person can select from a book, a Blu-ray, a DVD, stock from the many review items we are sent here that I have to find new homes for because I am running out of space. So if you are currently a Patreon supporter, keep an eye out on your inbox. One thing to let people know about, the Batman Hush giveaway will be starting on Monday. I think it's going to be split, part secret sauce, part social media. So keep an eye out for that. And enter to win, and good luck. And just for a little update, one of the other podcast-related projects that I work on, I am one of the audio producers for Escape Pod. I think I've mentioned this before, that Escape Pod was nominated for a Hugo Award this year, one of the finalists. And while Escape Pod did not win, as one of the finalists, we got pins. We got Hugo Rocket pins. And this week, I think just about all of us who were named on the ballot got our pins. I have a pin. I have a Hugo pin saying that congratulations on being a 2020 Hugo finalist. And oh my God, I am still geeking out over that, but it's beautiful. I think we're going to have a collective squee on Twitter once all of us get our pins. The other recipients are Merle Lafferty, Ben Kinney, Alistair Stewart, Tina Connolly, SB Divya, and Adam. Oh my God. Adam Procht, who is the other audio producer. And I think, like I said, once we all get our pins, I think we're going to have a collective squee on Twitter. At least that's the plan. If not, I will squee for everyone because, oh my God, there's a Hugo finalist pin on my desk. Still kind of in a state of stunned disbelief and joy. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.